Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Roman and Corin. So we've talked about preparedness on different episodes of this podcast. And I mentioned that my particular brand of prepping is focused mostly on the type of situations that I've encountered living here in Israel and what I found helpful. And I think that one thing we're going to be living with for the foreseeable future in this part of the world is geopolitical instability, and particularly this conflict with Iran. The type of things you can do to prepare yourself for the possibility of the outbreak of ballistic missile warfare, which happened last year, is pretty limited. There's not much you can buy from the internet that's going to actually help you in that kind of a situation. But two things that I did find helpful, and which I therefore include in my prepping bag, is communications. Number one, communications meaning a cell phone, a power bank, a travel router. We've talked about that before. A 4G phone or an access point, and basically anything that can keep you going, receiving information from the authorities and alerts. And we've talked about all that gear in good detail at this point, and that would be my number one recommendation for what was actually the most helpful, especially because when you're in safe shelter, sometimes a significant depth beneath the ground, you don't have great options for things like cellular, and that's where the travel router, Ethernet cables, all the things you wouldn't really think about as kind of prepping gear actually become really useful. The second thing is a flashlight. A lot of these places that you end up finding for shelter are listed on municipal websites, often without too much detail about how to actually find the designated safe space. They're often dilapidated, poorly maintained, dark, and a flashlight, to state the obvious, is an amazing thing to have in that kind of situation, because you're looking for often just a single reflective sign at a certain level of the car park that says shelter or something like that. So it's been on my agenda for a while, or my list, that I want to get a good quality one. I have a basic torch that I picked up from AliExpress, and my grandfather, my late grandfather, was a great enthusiast of a great advocate for having a good torch. I guess I get my love of gizmos and gadgets maybe partially genetically from him. So I know that there is actually a pretty substantial community of people online. Reddit, of course, as always, is the fulcrum for people who are really into flashlights. I know there is ones that are kind of considered to be military grade, made in the US, other things like this that you'll come across. And that's what I'm looking for. Maybe, you know, $100 to $200 purchase, something that's, you know, not overly bulky, maybe 6 to 8 inches of that kind of a size, and basically something that's just not going to let you down, right? Because that's what you want these things to do. You want them to hold a charge well. You want them to be good quality. You want them to be strong enough that if they fall out of your backpack or your hands, they're not going to be inoperable. And I think it's just one of those things that you don't want to compromise in quality on at all. So Herman and Corn, what would you recommend would be as a first-time quality flashlight buyer, from the internet or from the US, where I might be some time over the next few months, what are those quality brands that have a great reputation among users on Reddit, etc.? And when I'm looking for specs, what am I looking for that really makes a difference between a kind of cheap knockoff product and one that's really going to serve you and your family well, hopefully for many years? Over to you, Herman and Corin. Let's talk about quality flashlights for preparedness in today's episode of My Weird Prompts.
You know, it is funny how certain objects can completely change your perspective on a space. We were just talking about this in the kitchen the other day, how the right tool makes a stressful situation feel like a manageable problem. Welcome back to my weird prompts, everyone. I am Korn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother.
Herman Poppleberry at your service. And Korn, you are absolutely right. There is a psychological component to gear that people often overlook. It is not just about the photons hitting the wall. It is about the confidence that comes from knowing your equipment is not going to fail when the literal and figurative lights go out.
Exactly. And our housemate Daniel actually sent us a prompt about this today. He has been thinking a lot about preparedness, especially given the Iranian missile barrages we saw last June. He mentioned that while he has got his communications and power situations mostly sorted, he's looking to upgrade his lighting. He is tired of that basic torch he got online and wants something serious in the $100 to $200 range.
I love that Daniel is diving into the flashlight world. It is one of those rabbit holes that is surprisingly deep. People think a light is just a light until they see a high-end emitter in action or feel the build quality of a light made from aerospace-grade aluminum. Since we live in the same house, I have seen that cheap plastic light he is using, and yeah, it is definitely time for an upgrade. Especially when you consider the state of some of the public shelters or miklatim around the city. They can be dark, damp, and frankly a bit maze-like if you are not familiar with them.
I remember back in episode 224, we talked about staying online with uninterruptible power supplies and fiber reliability. Lighting feels like the natural physical extension of that digital preparedness. If you cannot see your way to the router or the shelter, all the digital prep in the world does not help much. So Herman, let us start with the big question Daniel asked. What distinguishes a high-quality product in that $100-plus range from the $10 knockoffs you see at the checkout counter?
That is the perfect place to start because the differences are not just cosmetic. The first thing you usually notice is the efficiency of the electronics. Cheap lights use very basic drivers. A driver is the circuit board that regulates the power from the battery to the LED. In a cheap light, as the battery voltage drops, the light just gets dimmer and dimmer. In a high-end light, like something from ZebraLight or Surefire, they use sophisticated butt-boost drivers that keep the output perfectly flat until the battery is almost empty.
That is a huge point for a shelter situation. You do not want a light that starts dying the moment you need it. You want consistent, predictable output. But what about the physical build? Daniel mentioned he wants something that can withstand being dropped.
Right. Most high-end lights use type 3 hard anodized aluminum. It is a much thicker, tougher coating than what you find on budget lights. It resists scratches and corrosion. But more importantly, the internal components are often potted. Potting is when the manufacturer fills the head of the light with a special resin or compound that encases the electronics. This protects them from vibration and impact. If you drop a potted light onto concrete, the glass might crack if you are unlucky, but the electronics will keep working. Cheap lights usually have the driver just held in by a retaining ring, and a good drop can snap a solder joint or pop a component right off the board.
That makes sense. It is the difference between a toy and a tool. Now, Daniel mentioned the enthusiast communities and US-made brands. I know you spend way too much time on those forums, Herman. When we are looking at that $100 to $200 bracket, what brand should be at the top of the list for someone who wants reliability over everything else?
If we are talking pure, unadulterated reliability and build quality, I have to mention the big US names first. Surefire and Streamlight are the industry standards for a reason. They are what police and military units use. Specifically, something like the Surefire G2X or the Streamlight Protec series. They are built like tanks. However, there is a trade-off. These brands tend to be more conservative with their technology. They prioritize a light that turns on every single time over having the highest possible lumen count or the fanciest features.
I have noticed that. You will see a Surefire that costs $150 and only puts out 600 lumens, while a Chinese brand like Acibeam or Phoenix will claim 5,000 lumens for the same price. Why the discrepancy?
It is the lumen trap, Korn. This is the first thing Daniel needs to look out for. Lumens are a measure of total light output, but they do not tell you how that light is managed. A cheap light might hit 3,000 lumens for 30 seconds, get burning hot, and then step down to 300 lumens to save itself from melting. A high-end professional light is rated for sustained output. Also, we have to talk about candela versus lumens. This is a crucial distinction for Daniel's specific needs in Jerusalem.
Explain that, because I think most people just look at the lumen number on the box.
Think of lumens like the total amount of water coming out of a hose. Candela is the pressure of the stream. If you have a light with high lumens but low candela, it is a floodlight. It lights up everything right in front of you but does not reach very far. If you have high candela, you have throw. That light will punch through darkness, smoke, or dust to see something 100 yards away. In a dark, dusty shelter or a long underground hallway, you actually want a good balance, but leaning toward higher candela helps you identify things at a distance. For Daniel, I would suggest looking at the Cloud Defensive MCH Duty or the ModLight PLHV2. These are US-made and have incredible candela to punch through what we call photonic barriers.
That is a great analogy. So, for Daniel, if he is navigating a dilapidated shelter, he needs enough flood to see where he is stepping, but enough throw to see down the next corridor. Are there brands that handle that balance particularly well within his budget?
Absolutely. If he wants to stick to that enthusiast-grade quality without going full tactical, I would point him toward ZebraLight. They are a cult favorite for a reason. Their current SC65 CHI model is incredibly small, very efficient, and uses the Nikia 719A emitter. They are not made in the US, but their engineering is top tier. Another one is Malkoff Devices. Gene Malkoff makes lights in Alabama that are legendary for being indestructible. They are very simple, often just one or two modes, but you could probably drive a truck over them and they would still work. They fit perfectly in that $100 to $200 range.
I like the idea of simplicity. In a high-stress situation, like when an alert goes off and you are heading to a shelter, you do not want to be cycling through 15 different strobe modes or trying to remember a complex button press sequence.
You hit the nail on the head. That is a major differentiator. High-end lights often have what we call a tactical user interface. Usually, it means a tail cap switch. You press it halfway for momentary light and click it for constant on. It always starts on high, or whatever mode you programmed it to. Compare that to a cheap light where you have to click through high, medium, low, strobe, and SOS just to turn the thing off. In an emergency, that is not just annoying, it is a liability.
Let us talk about the light itself for a second. Daniel mentioned finding his way in dark shelters. One thing I have noticed with your high-end lights, Herman, is that the light looks different. It is not that harsh bluish white light you get from a cheap LED. It looks more like natural sunlight. Is that what they call CRI?
Yes, color rendering index. This is a huge one for preparedness. Most cheap LEDs have a low CRI, usually around 70. They make everything look flat and gray, and it is hard to distinguish between colors. High CRI lights, which use emitters like the Nikia 519A or the 719A, have a rating of 90 or 95. This is vital in a medical emergency or even just navigating. If you are looking at a map or trying to see if a wire is red or brown or checking for a leak in a pipe, high CRI makes a world of difference. It reduces eye strain and helps your brain process the environment faster.
I can see how that would be comforting in a dark shelter. It makes the space feel less alien. Now, what about batteries? Daniel mentioned holding a charge well. I know we covered portable power stations back in episode 249, but for a handheld device, what is the gold standard now?
For a serious light in 2026, you are looking at lithium ion, specifically the 18650 or the 21700 cells. These batteries hold a massive amount of energy compared to old AA batteries. But here is the pro tip for Daniel. Look for a light with dual fuel capability. This means it can run on a rechargeable 18650 battery, but in a pinch, it can also take two CR123A lithium disposables. If the power is out for a week and you cannot recharge, you can still find CR123 batteries in old military or medical stock.
That is a solid tip. Let us talk about the drop resistance again. Daniel specifically mentioned he wants something that can withstand being dropped. We talked about potting, but what about the lens? I have seen some lights with these heavy-duty bezels.
Those are called crenulated bezels. They serve two purposes. One is to protect the glass lens from hitting the ground directly. The other is more tactical. They can be used for self-defense or breaking glass in an emergency. For Daniel, I would suggest a light with a stainless steel bezel ring. Aluminum is soft, so if you drop it on the head, it can deform and trap the lens or the internals. Stainless steel is much harder and will take the hit without changing shape. Also, Daniel, use the lanyard. Most high-end lights come with a paracord lanyard. If it is around your wrist, you cannot drop it in the first place.
Okay, so let us summarize some specific specs Daniel should look for when he is browsing. We have got Type 3, hard anodization, stainless steel bezel, potted electronics, high CRI if possible, dual fuel capability, and a simple user interface. Anything else?
I would add IPX8 waterproofing. That means the light can be submerged in 2 meters of water for 30 minutes. Even if he is not planning on going swimming, a shelter might have a burst pipe or it might be raining heavily when he is outside. You want a light that is sealed with high-quality O-rings. And one more thing, moonlight mode. This is a setting that is less than 1 lumen. It sounds useless until you are in a crowded shelter at 3 in the morning and you need to find your glasses without waking up 50 other people. It can also run for weeks on a single battery.
You know, it occurs to me that we should mention headlamps too. If you are in a dark, dilapidated shelter, you might need your hands free to carry a bag, help someone else, or climb a ladder.
You are so right, Korn. I always tell people that if you only have one light, it should be a headlamp. But since Daniel asked for a torch, I would suggest a right-angle light. Brands like Zebra Light and Armitek make these. It looks like a small flashlight, but the light comes out the side. It comes with a headband so you can wear it as a headlamp, but it also has a pocket clip and a magnetic tail cap. The Armitek Wizard C2 Pro is a beast. It is potted, it is rated for 10 meter drops, and it is fully waterproof. It is basically the tank of the headlamp world.
We actually touched on some similar engineering concepts back in episode 2085 when we discussed the engineering of modern spy gear. It is that same focus on miniaturization and extreme reliability. When you are paying for a $100 light, you are paying for the engineering that ensures it works in the worst possible conditions.
Exactly. It is the peace of mind. You are paying for the testing. A company like Surefire, Malkoff, or Cloud Defensive spends a lot of time making sure their lights won't fail. They aren't just buying parts off a shelf and slapping them in a tube. They are designing the heat sinks, the reflectors, and the circuitry to work as a cohesive system.
So, Herman, if you had to pick one specific light for Daniel right now, given he lives in Jerusalem, he is looking for preparedness, and he has a $200 limit, what is your top pick?
That is tough, but I think I would go with the Cloud Defensive MCH Duty. It is made in the US, it is incredibly rugged, and it has one of the best beams in the industry. It has 80,000 candela, so it will punch through anything, but it still has enough spill to see your feet. It comes with a high-quality battery and a charger. It is right around the $200 mark, and it is the kind of light you buy once and keep for 20 years.
I like that. It is a serious tool for a serious situation. What about a slightly more budget-friendly option that still hits all those quality marks?
I would look at the Phoenix PD36R Pro. Phoenix is a Chinese brand, but they are very well established and their quality control is excellent. It uses a 21700 battery, has a great tactical switch, and is very durable. It is usually around $120. It is a fantastic first real flashlight for someone.
I think Daniel is going to be very happy with either of those. It is such a step up from those cheap plastic torches. One final thing before we wrap up. I want to emphasize the importance of training with your gear. Daniel, once you get that new light, don't just put it in your bag. Take it to a dark room. Or better yet, take it to the shelter when things are quiet. Practice finding the buttons and swapping the battery in total darkness. Muscle memory is everything in an emergency.
That is a fantastic point, Korn. If you can't operate your light by feel alone, you aren't fully prepared. It should be an extension of your hand.
This has been a fascinating dive into something I think a lot of people overlook. We focus so much on the big things in preparedness, like food and water, but the ability to see is so fundamental. It is the base of the pyramid of needs in an emergency.
It really is. Darkness breeds panic. Light brings order. If you can see the exit, if you can see the person next to you, if you can see the obstacle in your path, your heart rate drops and you can think clearly. That is what Daniel is really buying for $200. He is buying clarity in a moment of chaos.
I love that. Buying clarity in a moment of chaos. We should put that on a t-shirt. But seriously, it is a great way to frame it. It is not about the gadget, it is about the capability it provides. For anyone else listening who is thinking about their own preparedness, check out our website at myweirdprompts.com. We have a whole archive of episodes, over 400 of them now, covering everything from technical power to the psychological side of living in a conflict zone.
And hey, if you are enjoying these deep dives, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show, and we love hearing from our regular listeners.
Definitely. Daniel, thanks for the prompt. Let us know which one you end up going with. I am betting he goes for the zebra light. He is an engineer at heart. He will appreciate the efficiency.
I am betting on the cloud defensive. He wants that indestructible feel. Either way, he is going to be much better prepared.
Agreed. Well, this has been My Weird Prompts. We're going to head back to the kitchen and maybe see if we can find some of those silicone lubricants for my own lights. I think I am overdue for some maintenance.
You are always overdue for some gadget maintenance, Herman.
Guilty as charged. Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay safe and keep your lights bright.
Talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.